All right. So I'm 70 KTTH, Brian Suits here on your Tuesday morning. And the recall, the deadline is 8 p.m. tonight if you're in the 3rd District of Seattle's City Council Districts. For a councilperson Sawant, you'll have to, if you're not going to get it mailed in, so you're going to have to physically take it to a King County drop box, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And how's it being portrayed in national news? Because if you're unaware of this, you know, because you've been in Seattle for the 7 years of her reign, of her media airtime video suck, then you don't know this. But, I mean, as far as I know, there might be, you know, some little town in Oregon or something where, you know, a full-on, there's a socialist mayor or something like that. I don't know. But, see, well, first of all, if you're unaware of this, Seattle has a long, long history of wacky socialist, communist activism and violence and all this. It's only the ignorant that were surprised of Ms. Sawant's rise to prominence as apparently America's only prominent, you know, large market, openly socialist city councilperson. 102 years ago, we had a mayor, Ole Hansen, the pandemic mayor, the influenza 1918-1919 mayor, the guy who shut Seattle down the first time, but only for a few weeks. And he was hated by the left, and he broke a general strike in 1919, and he got a bomb in his mailbox for thanks. So I mean, if you're unaware that this is a Northwest thing, you probably all grew up. All right, okay. I don't want to do this. You know, I'm not throwing you into the bus, staff. But how much of a Northwest history guy? I mean, you're a World War II history, military buff. I'll grant you that. Have you? What school district did you come up in?
Well, I can say I was private schooled most of my life, but Federal Way and Tacoma.
Okay, Centralia Massacre. Ever heard of it?
Not by name, no. I could think of something bad that happened in Centralia, but nothing that I don't think I've heard of that quite.
You know what? Something bad happened in Centralia 2 days ago, and it was the so-called outlet mall that charged me $200 for a sweater. So, you know, that was my Centralia massacre. Sorry, Pendleton. $200? Seriously. No, it's... Anyway, this is a thing. And Seattle is portrayed as, you know, wacky, lefty Seattle. And it's a well-earned sobriquet. And so, we have breaking news. The breaking news is that Tom Brady's wife has saved a sea turtle. But you know what? We don't have time for that right now. All right. So this is from the AP. This is today. The guy's name. At first, Henry Bridger II supported Kashama Sawant, Seattle's combative socialist city council member, a liberal voter in one of the most liberal neighborhoods, an extremely liberal city. He liked a fresh outlook and support for a $15 minimum wage. 7 years later, Bridger is leading an effort to recall Sawant with ballots due Tuesday night in Seattle's 3rd District. The results could further shift power in the Northwest's largest city and deal another setback to leftist activists who saw business-friendly candidates win a council seat. Dear God! And the mayor's office in last month's general election. You know what's crazy? I've heard people refer to Mayor-elect Harrell as Republican. And it's, huh? You know, sorry, what town do you think he's mayor of? But anyway, at stake is how the city approaches homelessness, police reform, taxation. And you know, at stake is a crazy person who wanted to disestablish law enforcement, tax Amazon into disappearing because she forgot to propose digging a moat or whatever. I mean, just see California. And you'll see what would happen to money, wealth, jobs, et cetera, if she suddenly was king of the world. Mr. Bridger said, quote, she literally blasts people who don't agree with her. If you're not in lockstep with her ideology, you become the enemy. You're called a right-wing Republican. You're called a racist. You're bullied and pushed around, close quote. Anyway, he goes on. And there you go. But so anyway, there are for a recall. And, you know, as you all have probably learned, a recall for a Seattle City Council person, you know, it winds up bouncing off the state Supreme Court. It's not just simply a matter of can you get the signatures of a number equivalent to 15% of last election's turnout where that person was elected. The bar in California, if you're tired, if you lost count of gubernatorial re-elections in California, if you filled your bingo card with Schwarzenegger or whatever, you know, fine. The bar is a little higher in most offices in Washington. But its reason is because you have a high bar because the likelihood of the tooth gnashing and brow furrowing of somebody being kicked out of office is more likely. And so a huge amount of ballots have been returned so far. And if you don't, if you can't mentally picture this, District 3, you know, is kind of roughly the backbone of it is Madison. So it goes from Madison Park, wealthy liberal, but if there are wealthy conservatives, that's where they are. Madison Park up the hill, and you get a little bit of the central district and all that. And so there is a critical mass of people that tend not to vote in special elections. Lower income. That's the bottom line. And then you have loads and loads of people who are ultra liberal, but they're ultra wealthy. And that's called Seattleitis. Well, they have had it up to here. And I'm, for purposes of illustration, I'm holding my hand up to here. With her, and it's funny to hear that it's only taken 7 years, but you know she winds up talking about, you know, you rich there in Madison Park, and we'll be coming for you and the whole thing, and so it's funny to see that they have had that there is a limit, and she's it, and this has always happened in Seattle, that if you recall in the aftermath, sort of, you know, right after WTO in the 2000 and the 2001s and 2002s, there were a couple of kind of wacky Seattle City Council members, but they just got turned out at the next election. So if you're in the know, then you know what I'm, yeah. So anyway, but in this case, a recall, you know, Seattle has no problem unelecting people, has no problem, you know, you serving your term, proving who you are, and then turning you out. So anyway, and this is the process, and there's no doubt that it'll be fair, but she'll accuse the process of being racist and of being at the beck and call of rich Republican racist interests. Like, you know what? We could hold a fishing derby in Seattle and give away, you know, the new model Corvette. If you can deliver one rich Republican who can show a Seattle residential address, we'll have a rich Republican fishing derby courtesy of 770 KTTH. We'll weigh them in. There'll be a weigh-in. Well, there'll be a prize for biggest rich Republican. It's like the Port Angeles Salmon Derby. And then we'll have a prize for most rich Republicans. So we'll have a fishing derby if she says that, but she will. I don't know. The results, I think, are going to be overnight, something like that. But it's funny because so many of you are unaffected by her votes, because we've, you know, like I said, we've blued up the blue cities by unredding them. You know, Seattle's always been blue. Ever since I lived here, it's never really been purple. you get Spokane, which is red, and it's kind of purpling up because people from Seattle are fleeing. And they're saying, well, I'm too good for Bellevue. I'll just keep driving on the 90. And hell no, I won't even gas up in Ellensburg. But they're purpling up Boise and Spokane by adding more blue. Meanwhile, here on the West Coast, the blue city, you wonder how did she come to be? Because the blue cities are getting bluer. And to be reelected, which is the number one job of a politician, of an elected politician, to get reelected, you have to be bluer than your opponent. So that's how they blew up. And they get bluer and bluer and bluer. And Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, they're all undergoing the same thing. And she's a symptom. You know, she's not the cause, but she's a symptom. But maybe there will be a biopsy, if you know what I'm saying. All right, take a break. We'll check the traffic. When we come back, I'll give you the latest on Tom Brady's wife saving a sea turtle. Team coverage coming up here in just a second. Brian Suitzer, 770 KTTH. Let's check in with Right Way Traffic. Okay, you all understand, I don't think this is a story, right? I mean, I'm mocking the news. 770 KTTH, Brian Suitzer. But this morning, breaking news is just in. So I listen, I channel surf as I'm driving, of course, with hands attended to, paying attention to all applicable, motor vehicle laws, et cetera, et cetera. But I go around on XM changing channels from BBC to Fox to MSNBC just because it angers me enough that I can pay attention to my driving. And, the line forms here to love and respect Tom Brady, all right? And I absolutely salute his nuptials choice. It's, they're perfect for each other. Former Victoria's Secret model Gisele Bündchen. But this is, like, to me, one of the peak 2021s happened earlier today because Tom Brady's wife and just wild stab. Oh, okay. Only 18.2 million followers on the Insta. And that makes her like a 1%er on the Instagram. But she puts up a video because she saved a sea turtle. And so I'm assuming this is in her home country of Brazil. Yeah, well, yes, her name is Gisele Bündchen. So her dad, pretty sure fleeing war criminal, not sure. But so anyway, here's what happened. There was a sea turtle. And the sea turtle, as we all know clearly, speak only Portuguese, the language of Brazil. So she calmed it down with some soothing Portuguese, wearing a designer swimsuit, as it turns out. She gave it mouth to mouth. Her dog Onyx was there, called Onyx because he's some sort of pit bull lab, all black. The mighty sea turtle struggled. She removed the golf ball from its blowhole and took it back to the ocean. And then she added the soundtrack. Here's the hopeful sea turtle music. But it's that they read what she wrote on the unnamed media outlet that did this as a story. And if you need a daily affirmation about leadership and doing the right thing, well, here is supermodel Gisele Bündchen. With it. She says, quote, life is a series of opportunities that appear daily, and we choose what to do with them. Today was no different. Early this morning, I was walking on the beach, and Onyx started barking at a pile of ocean trash that had washed during high tide. When I came closer, I saw this beautiful turtle turned upside down with a look of hopelessness and exhaustion in her eyes. She checked. Her body knotted and entangled in a fishing net. I immediately started to free her from the net that was strangling her, but even after we got her untied, she was too tired to make her way back to the ocean. I didn't think twice. I just picked her up and carried her to the water. Amazing how adrenaline can make you stronger. I felt relieved and so happy to see her swim away freely, grateful that I was there and able to help. But there are so many other animals that unfortunately end up dying on nets like da 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 da. Pray. Pray that we all rise and remember the sea turtles. And then she did it in Portuguese. If you didn't, and then I can't read that. But so anyway, dying language. And I don't know. I didn't subject you to this. Did you see the video, Brady? Staff Brady?
No, I did not see it.
Staff of Brady. The staff of Brady. That's okay. I'm a cynic. And I think Alec Baldwin pulled the trigger because there's no way to shoot that gun. The sea turtle wasn't like what I might call super fouled up in the net.
It was just laying in the net?
Well, like a retired supermodel just with her bare hands just frees it. It happens to be upside down. And then, again, they happened on it because her dog, Onyx, was able to bark at it and alert her to it. Where's more sea turtles, Onyx? Point to them. Go get them, boy. Anyway, I'm just saying it didn't look too hapless. And I don't know how to read sea turtle eyes. She said there was hopelessness in its eyes until a retired Victoria's Secret model came along. I'm just saying, if you wanted to pay off for your 18.2 million followers on Instagram, and there's nobody else around on the beach, the only hole in my theory is, where do you get the sea turtle in the first place? All right. But, you know, are they... and I don't see her checking that, except that it came ashore because it was female to lay eggs. So by process of deduction, I salute her supermodel abilities there. It probably was a female. I'm just saying, to look at it in the net, it doesn't look super fouled up. And then she gets international publicity because she saved Zitzy Turtle, and then she added a soundtrack. And somebody else was shooting the video. It's I'm just saying, Jussie Smollett. This is a sea turtle Jussie Smollett. That's what this is.
You're saying this was a setup?
I'm not. I'm just saying it sure smells like a... I think we need to talk to that sea turtle about... We need to put it on the stand. By the way... Have you ever seen a dumber celebrity move than letting this stupid thing even go to trial in Chicago? Have you been following this stupid trial of that stupid actor?
Of Jussie Smollett?
Jussie Smollett.
Or is it called Juicy Smollett?
Yeah. Have you been catching any of that?
We have been following it, and we covered it sometime last week about the trial and all the charges and the story behind it, how he paid these guys to rough him up and put a noose around his neck.
And this is why... lawyers drive Bentleys when they represent celebrities. Everyone I know has said, hey, you plead this out on the down low. You plead this out to maybe Mayhem, and then you do 500 hours of public service, teaching theater or whatever in Chicago. You make it go away is what you do. But instead, his lawyers are like, and I'd never heard of the guy before that horrible Donald Trump put a noose around his neck at 3 a.m. in Chicago outside that subway. So the deal is, he's on the stand and he looks stupid. The story is stupid. The two Nigerian brothers, they've got a check deposit from him. They're on video. After they get briefed by him, buying the rope. And it's like they didn't buy, like, big, thick hemp rope. Did you ever see a picture of him, you know, by Chicago police wearing the noose?
I didn't see the picture, but I'm assuming
it's like
it was
a
very thin rope, and you could just rip it really easily.
Well, it's nylon. You can't rip it easily. What are you, like, really strong?
Yeah, you get sharp nails.
You put it up for a clothesline. And so you have these guys, video... whole thing. You have their testimony which jibes with their original story. He paid us to beat him up and even told us what his you know, evil plan was. And given the temperature of that time and the whole thing. So, you go to the Chicago prosecutors and you say, you know, listen, I'll plead to a lesser charge. But I'll deny that I paid them to do this, and I'll do 500 hours of the blah, blah, blah. And here's what I'll do. I'll go get tied up in a fishing net on a beach, dressed as a sea turtle for Gisele Bündchen. But just said, you're a lawyer who was more interested in your best interest than your money would say, yeah, let's plead this out. You don't want to be on stand. And then they would add this, as Jussie Smollett flops his way back into the Atlantic, into the warm embrace of the Atlantic Ocean, you know, and all. Instead, they have him on the stand. So anyway, we do have team coverage on this, and if any more developments happen, we pulled some people off the Biden-Putin video call, and we have them on Tom Brady's wife rescuing a sea turtle. And I promise you, we'll have more of that later on, if we feel like it. I sense I've pretty much walked the legs off this donkey, haven't I? Kind of beaten it to death. So China, if you're thinking of investing in China, bad news for you. That whole transparency thing, which many economists think is the centerpiece of capitalism, is going away fast. And what was Seattle like 80 years ago today, on the 80th anniversary of the attack in Pearl Harbor? What happened in Seattle? Guess what? Guess what? You won't guess it correctly. When we come back, I'll tell you what happened in Seattle 80 years ago today, December 7th, 1941. Back in a second, Brian Suits here, 770 KTTH. By the way, the text number, prepare to copy, 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Your text will come in, and staff of Brady will filter them, and we'll get some on. Brian Suits here, 770 KTTH. Let's get you to work with Right Way Traffic. Boston, because the Patriots beat the Bills. So I only have, by the way, Brian Suits here, 770 KTTH. That was an otherwise kind of a boring game, obviously. The reason I watched Staff of Brady was because that weather was so bad. And that's I love watching that stuff, you know, all bundled up in the heat. Because, I've been to some bad weather games.
You've been to a Green Bay game?
No.
In Lambeau when it's real cold?
No, I'm not stupid. You know what? They're advertising for stock buyers now. The Packers. Like, no, I wouldn't. Yeah. But, the worst game at that I've ever been to, because we used to have season tickets, was the NFC Championship game, you know, Panthers at the Seahawks. And it was just cold. It was just really, really cold. You know, great game. Seahawks won. Otherwise, no. No, don't start me on Pullman, which I haven't visited since 1988. But I hear it still gets colder. Well, it's kind of a deceptive headline. Seattle Times this morning. Parents of accused Michigan school shooter have ties to Issaquah. And, okay, control F, ISSA. Oh, here it comes up. Yeah, all right. They lived in Issaquah from 2008 to 2012. And doesn't not quite clear what they did there. But anyway, so there's your ties to Issaquah on that one. The big, as I was telling Brady this morning, the big thing that jumps out in this article is that they bought a house for $70,000 in 2015. So that's the part of Michigan they're from. Oakland County property records show the Crumbleys purchased their Oxford home for $70,000, and then it skyrocketed to $72,000 by 2019. But just the fact that there's houses anywhere in America for that price, what you would normally call a shed in the Northwest. And I don't know. I would just say, as a heads up, kind of a pro tip, if your kid is kind of an introvert and he's having, you know, trouble by the time it's third grade, go ahead and give him a pseudonym for school. Anything but Crumbly or something. Maybe try Hitler or something, but Crumbly. Well, let me read to you the headline from the war special, a war extra from the Seattle Daily Times. This date, late in the afternoon, 1941, December 7th, 1941, Seattle Daily Times, blackout tonight, radio stations to be silent, Wake and Guam blasted. Then column one, two battleships, aircraft carrier sunk, says Japan. See, and that's, the sun had not gone down and they were still saying Japan. In everything, this morning I was, you know, thinking, well, you know, there's a formula for 80th anniversaries. Let's find old newsreels. Every newsreel said the four-letter J word, which we don't say anymore. You don't rhyme it with slap. You know, nothing, right? We don't. You just don't. You know, but it was like in the headlines the next day, on Monday, December 8th. So it's kind of unusual that the Seattle Times, by that day, said Japan. Eric Lacidis did this column back in 2016, what happened in Seattle after the Pearl Harbor attack in 1941. And I teased, you'll be surprised with what happened. You know what happened? A riot, because there was an immediate blackout. It was, you know, the West Coast, martial law was quickly declared all up and down the West Coast. Blackouts at night. That means car headlights as well. So what you had to do was you had to take black electrical tape and black it out the entire headlight, but leave a little slit, a little, like, you know, aperture, long rectangular aperture, and then drive slower. Nevertheless, there were many car accidents in Seattle. And I read from his column here, quote, through the daytime hours of December 7th, news about Pearl Harbor doesn't come as one long broadcast. The country gets much of its entertainment from radio shows that offer a combination of music. Blah, 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 blah. So a hit show such as the Jell-O program starring Jack Benny fades out of music, has a news bulletin telling listeners not to panic, and fades back to the music. So there's music, Jack Benny is making cracking comedy. They fade it down. A reminder not to panic. That's Sunday night. Seattleites get their first night radio black. Every radio station in Seattle had to turn the power off and stop transmitting, except one, Cairo AM. Well, this powerful 50 watts, but the reason being, because those clever Japanese pilots might be homing in on Seattle via the strength of radio signals, which point in fact, little did authorities know, except everyone knew in aviation that you could do that. If you were circumnavigating the Pacific Ocean, if you want to find Hawaii, you tuned into KGMB. And it was the most powerful signal coming out of Honolulu. And the Japanese actually did that. Everybody did. If you want to find, you know, it's Seattle, you tuned into Cairo. Because nobody else on the West Coast is broadcasting on, well, that's not true. no one within several thousand miles is on 710 a.m. So here you have 710 a.m., 50,000 watts, just, you know, blasting, right? So it is odd that they allowed Cairo to stay on, because that would be the first one that I would have turned off, because it was the most powerful signal. But nevertheless, the only one that stayed on was Cairo. You have to have, also because nationally Cairo was designated regionally as an emergency station, it had to stay on. And I was going to make a Dave Ross joke. Look at that. I passed on a Dave Ross joke. Anyway, Cairo, with its 50,000-watt signal, was the only one that could broadcast after 7 p.m. Okay, so here's your punchline. Here's the riots. The first blackout on Monday night brings out the worst in a crowd of 2,000 that gathers downtown. I don't know why Steven Spielberg didn't put this in his stupid 1941 movie. The Times headline the next day says, sailor's wife leads glass-smashing mob blacking out lights. The sailor's wife turns out to be 19-year-old Ethel Chelsvig. The crowd, many of them reported to have been drinking, smashes 26 plate glass windows and a bunch of neon signs in stores in which lights are still showing. Can I just point out, if you got 2,000 people and you only smash 26 plate glass windows to turn out lights, then that's not a very efficient crowd. Her voice, according to court records, foreshadowing, high above the roar of the crowd, Chelsvig cries out, quote, I'm married to a man in the Navy. He's out there fighting. Are you going to stand by while these lights threaten the very life of our city? Break them. Turn them out. Close quotes. And suddenly having a mid-Atlantic accent. At one point, while breaking the plate glass windows of these offending businesses with their lights out at 4th and Pine in Seattle, the crowd began singing, God Bless America. Chelsvig ends up being found guilty of disorderly conduct. The judge tells her, quote, all that a mob needs is a spark. I believe you were that spark, close quote. She's fined $25 in 1941 dollars. Try $488 in today's dollars. That would be, of course, if you find somebody for inciting a crowd in Seattle. I believe now you'd be paid $488. And the city of Seattle would install bulletproof glass. A woman named Helen Johnston writes letters to her husband, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, interesting article from Eric Lacidus, except that it's from 2016. There is a picture of the carnage to Fourth and Pine. There are a bunch of plate glass windows out. There's a crowd. It's night. By December 9th, boy, you talk about the real sneak attack. By December 9th, Washington State's evil liquor control board orders that no beer or wine can be sold during blackouts. So the slogan blackout before the blackout was raised. And in case bars might try to cover up selling, they're told they cannot cover their windows. The Seattle City Council prepares an ordinance banning congregations of three or more people. So you can't have a crowd, can't get all hooched up. And there you go. accidents all over the place because people were, as usual, overdriving their headlights. So there you go. All right, back in a second, we'll tell you some things are leaking out, as apparently the Biden-Putin video call has is coming to its end. They can't agree on who's going to hang up first, and then someone's muted, and then they can't hear the teacher and all that. So back in a second, Brian Suits here, 770 KTTH. Let's check in, get you to work with the right-way traffic. KTTH, Brian Suits here, and if you're still investing money in China and you maybe don't know it through your fund or whatever, here's some news for you. A new data security law has made it harder for foreign companies and investors to get information, including about supplies and financial statements. Several providers of ship locations in Chinese waters stopped sharing information outside the country. So they're not real good about that anyway. But when it comes to attracting investment, I think they'll find that transparency in that one arena is kind of crucial. Unless, of course, you're BlackRock, which still says buy China. They don't point out that China bought a huge percentage of BlackRock. But anyway, I'm just saying, would you put money somewhere where you couldn't even see how business was done? There's that. Leave it to RT, Russia Today. They're the ones who released the first video of the beginning of the great Putin-Biden Zoom call. And this is what they said: presidential greetings. Putin-Biden video call begins. The online summit started with Joe Biden chuckling and saying he was regretful the two leaders didn't meet at the most recent G20. Putin reminds him that they actually did. I'm adding that. Biden added he hoped they would meet face-to-face next time. And I will extend my hand in a long, sweaty handshake. This is 6:30 at night in Moscow, 10:30 a.m., Washington, D.C., so, you know, Biden's nap time. But this is the first, and this is translated, by the way. Putin is translated into English by the world's most bored translator, apparently.
I welcome you, Mr. President.
There you go. Hello.
Good to see you. Good afternoon.
Unfortunately, last time we didn't get to see one another at the G20. I hope next time we meet, we do it in person.
Greetings, Mr. President.
There you go. Hello.
Good afternoon.
We're 45 seconds into this thing, and they're still saying hello to each other. And this, did someone poke the sleeping translator? They go, you go, do Putin. Do Putin into English, and I will go, and I'm sure you're going to do fine. He sounds like he can't be bothered to do the rest of this. You know, are you kidding? Spartak Moscow is taking on Dynamo Sverdlovsk. I have to get home. It's 6:30. My wife will kill me. Anyway, there's 15 more seconds of this to go. And let me explain. Putin is sitting at a very, very large, dark wooden table. And he's wearing a white suit and he's petting a cat. No, he's good evening, Mr. Biden. He's wearing a regular dark gray suit, light blue shirt, gray tie. And he is sitting there, as always, with his smirk, for that is what he does. And then there's a big screen on the other side of the desk. And Biden is, I guess, at the... Oh, they have a set for this. Did you hear about this? Biden has a set. They actually have a TV set, not the Oval Office set. So they're using that set. So Biden is sitting at that desk on that set and trying to understand what the hell's going on. Because a woman is translating Putin into English. Oh, no, I'm sorry. A woman is translating Biden into Russian for Putin. And then the world's most bored translator is translating Putin into English. All right. Let's catch these last 15 seconds when Biden accidentally gives him permission to invade Ukraine.
Unfortunately, Last time we didn't get to see one another at the G20. I hope next time we meet, we do it in person.
Сожалению, не пришлось увидеться на встрече большой двадцатки, но надеюсь, в следующий раз мы.
You may invade Ukraine anytime. Anyway, that's it. So there you go. It was a couple of old guys in a Zoom call is what it was on that one. And someone had framed him for it. So there wasn't this. I only see Vova, Vlad, I can only see from the bridge of your nose down. Can you? Yeah, just push it back. Just push it from the top of the screen. Oh, all right. But I only see you from your little slitty eyes up to your freckled forehead, old guy. But we'll get readouts from the White House probably before noon, definitely not before 9 a.m. Pacific time. Declarations of agreement, I'm sure, will come out of the White House, and declarations of pretty much a blank check to invade Ukraine will come out of the Kremlin on that one. All right, well, I my understanding is that with the 8 p.m. deadline in King County, if you are a Seattle District 3 recall voter, then you have till 8 p.m. to physically drop it off. I think there will be a tranche of results released tonight. I believe, in my reading of the tea leaves, by going to far-left sources like, The Stranger, it appears that the thing that they're afeared about is that the wrong sort of people are voting in this, and that would be conservative, wealthy liberals. Well, I should say not. I don't mean politically conservative because you're summarily drummed out of Seattle, but I mean wealthy liberals who know that it's not normal to tolerate a giant swath of Capitol Hill as an independent, police-free country, and it's not normal to go there and address them and praise them. And it's not normal to open up City Hall. It's not normal to reveal the super secret, fortress of solitude that Jenny Durkin resides in and all that. And that after 7 years of maybe kind of getting the point, they may have had it up to here. Go be a professor of economics somewhere at whatever idiotic institution thinks that you have some credibility to teach that, yet you think that the people can take over Boeing or something. Like, all right, let's have an election. Who wants to build number 737? Go ahead. But it would seem that we have found the far left limit in Seattle politics, some say. And that's if she's turned out of office, circle that date, circle December 7th. Because I didn't think Seattle had a far left limit. I just did not. But maybe it's a combination of time plus politics. This might be it. If she survives this recall, she'll be empowered, by the way. You know how I know this? Because Gavin survived a recall. She'll be empowered. She'll feel like she just got reelected. So anyway, we'll see. For those of us it doesn't affect, sucks to be District 3. Sucks to be Seattle. Back tomorrow. Everybody have a good, thoughtful December 7th. It's a significant day, and believe it or not, there's kids that have no idea what today signifies. 80th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. All right, thanks to staff of Brady. We'll see you tomorrow. I'll be back. Go to mynorthwest.com and read Jason Rant's article about Seattle's solution to broken windows. The broken window theory? Try the bulletproof glass replacement theory. That and more at mynorthwest.com. Brian Suits out. See you back tomorrow, 770 KTTH. Let's check you getting. I mean, let's get you to work with right-way traffic last time.